You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
On the targeting of Ukrainian archaeological heritage. The unprovoked Russian attack on Ukraine in the end of February 2022 marks the largest armed conflict in Europe since the Second World War, and at least 6 million Ukrainians had to flee their home country. Unfortunately, we've gotten too familiar with daily reports of human suffering by nightly drone attacks or missile strikes, and at the same time, I'm still horrified with what happened in Bucha or the airstrike on the Mariupol theater, for example. However, this war also damaged or destroyed many archaeological sites and museums featuring the rich cultural heritage in eastern and southern Ukraine. In all this tragedy, one could maybe say that archaeology shouldn't matter so much. However, I would argue that the archaeological study is an encounter with the unknown, which in turn can significantly affect our understanding of the diversity of human behavior. Attitudes towards archaeological sites could be seen as a litmus test of civilization. It reflects tolerance and respect for other cultures. For this reason, archaeological knowledge is a very effective tool in the struggle against xenophobia, as my friend and one of the guests of today's episode, Dr. Pavlo Shidlovsky, so eloquently wrote. And here's already a teaser of our conversation.
A lot of values were stolen not by illegal groups, but by the politics of Russian state. Yep. Because such big museums as Kherson, Melitopol, Mariupol, these big museums was robbed by the Russian state. It was the program. It was special soldiers who took away all the exhibits, and these exhibits were transferred to Crimea, to occupied Donetsk, and to Russia.
Before we get into it more specifically, it is important to keep in mind that Russia has signed the Hague Convention for the Protection of Cultural Property in the event of an armed conflict. This convention requires states to take steps to protect cultural property in the event of war. However, as we will explore in this episode, since 2014, Russia systematically neglects the requirements of this international treaty. Because in this ongoing war, cultural heritage has become one of the most vulnerable segments of social life. Most notably, the looting of museum collections in the occupied territories, as dozens of regional museums were looted. Among the most famous are the ones of Kherson, Melitopol, and Mariupol. For example, the Melitopol Museum was previously known for having an important collection of Scythian gold artifacts, which we actually covered in an earlier episode of this podcast. And the Mariupol Museum held a collection of archaeological objects from the excavations of the famous Mariupol Neolithic Cemetery. This site was found in 1930 during the construction of the now famous Azovstal factory and became eponymous for a whole type of Neolithic graves in the region. The Mariupol Museum suffered significantly during the fighting that took place in the city, and those unique artifacts from the Neolithic cemetery that remained were looted, as it was reported that they were transported to occupied Donetsk. In addition, Russian claims have already appeared that they, quote, rescued the mentioned Scythian gold artifacts or the objects from the Mariupol Museum. In addition, in the territories currently undergoing military operations in Ukraine, also active and extensive landscape transformations are taking place. This is associated with both the direct consequences of damage by mines, artillery shells, or rockets, as well as with the constructions of fortifications, most notably extensive trench systems. This has direct impact on archaeological sites, as my guests of this episode published some really striking pictures of archaeological monuments like burial mounds, ramparts and hill forts being used for military positions or being covered with modern craters from artillery hits. However, one needs to also keep in mind that the mentioned landscape transformation can also lead to the discovery of new archaeological sites. But due to very understandable reasons, archaeological fieldwork and research has largely stopped in Ukraine. In addition, in the now liberated areas, there is a huge risk of landmines. Nevertheless, my guests of this episode are actively working to address this and many more issues, and I am very happy to welcome Dr. Pavlo Shidlovsky and Dr. Marta Andrichevich. They are both archaeologists originally from the Taras Shevchenko University in Kyiv, and I know them since many years as we were part of a joint research project trying to bring together archaeologists from Switzerland, Russia, Macedonia and Ukraine starting all the way back in 2015. Pavlo and Marta, thank you very much for taking the time for this conversation. First, if you don't mind to share, how has this conflict so far affected your personal and also professional lives?
Yes, thank you. Of course, the start of war influenced a lot our lives. Also, like even for me being abroad, that was a huge life event which changed everything. And I would like to start that also for 24th of February 2022. For this day was scheduled my PhD defense. And that was, you know, like any PhD defense is quite emotional event in personal terms and in academical terms, you know, like it's quite a day for everyone. And that was such a coincidence, you know, like I was nervous full week before my defense, about defense, but in the same time, we already had a context because Paolo also to come to us in Bern to be present in during my PhD defense in person. It was hard to believe. Yeah. But, you know, people not always expect something better and sometimes decline reality. But unfortunately, during those week of beginning of war, before PhD defense, all planes to Ukraine and from Ukraine were canceled. So we knew in 3 days before that, for example, mm-hmm. Paolo can't join us in Bern, but can you imagine all our emotional feelings in the morning on 24th February? That was a shock and surprise for everyone because all cities in Ukraine were under attack, but with all organizations and a bit of luck, we were able to make my PhD defense and quite successfully.
Yes,
but also,
congratulations.
Thank you very much. But also, you know, like it was absolutely not a typical day for PhD defense because besides those 1 hour of defense, I was also occupied with other questions which were related to my family safety, to safety of my close friends.
And Pavlo, how have you experienced this day?
As for me, the impact of the war, for me, I have no difference between personal and professional life, in fact, because as any scientist and as any teacher, you see that your work is coming to your personal life in new ways. When this war starts on 24 February last year, it was a shock for me, and I was asked by Swiss colleagues to be present on Martyr Defense, and that is why we held this event, we held this defense, and the rocket flying upon my head and Oberlin upon our district in Kyiv, and first strikes, first in Oberlin. So after this defense, I very quickly we gathered our things, our children, go to the car and go escape out of Kyiv, because on the outskirts of Kyiv there was battles in the first days.
Yeah.
So that is why it was very, very stressed and very complicated time to combine the professional and personal life. So, of course, the science stopped. The first time the science stopped at all, and science stopped in archaeology too. Of course, all field works were cancelled, maybe only several field works that was connected to the building processes was cancelled last summer. In other way, in education, in field work, and in science, there was like a collapse. But after when I returned to Kyiv in autumn, we need to start the process with archaeology to understand, just to understand what impact of war to archaeology, what was the impact of hostilities, what was the impact of bombing, rocket fire, and so on archaeological mm-hmm. sites. And we start to communicate, to think with different people, from different organizations, to start the process of monitoring, recording of the damage. And now in Ukrainian archaeology, we can observe some shift from academic science, from academic research, from academic expeditions to monitoring, recording, and heritage protection expeditions and heritage protection activity. So this is the main vector for the moment in Ukraine, Ukrainian archaeology. The situation from one side is quite difficult. From the other side, we try to elaborate some algorithms for protection, algorithms for evacuation of museum funds and so on.
Yeah, that actually brings me to my second question. Pavlo, you wrote that one goal of Putin's war against Ukraine is the destruction of your identity, history, and also public memory, and that therefore objects of cultural heritage have become a special target. Which are, for you, the prime examples of such a specific targeting?
Examples, a lot of examples, because we know from the front line, the evidence of people who lived on the nearby front line, we know that the churches is the first target in village. So firstly, yeah. Enemy shoot on churches. The next, when some territories was occupied, first target is the local museums and libraries. It's like a program of our enemy. They take off all Ukrainian literature from the libraries, and from other side they brings their Russian literature to our library. So in occupied territory. We know the special examples when the youth library in Chernigov was bombed by several very, very powerful bombs. I don't know exactly because I'm not a military soldier. It's as a half of ton bomb, monasteries, Orthodox monasteries became a target. And the special example is a special bombing of Svetohirsk Monastery in Donetsk region. And several days before, there was the Odessa Cathedral were destroyed yes. by the direct targeting. So as for me, for the moment, we can say that all international laws about like a blue shield system and so on, that we need to mark on the maps the cultural heritage buildings, for the moment, these laws not work here because any target on the map or any mark on the map, it's a target for the enemy. And we know that museums, historical buildings, churches, is the first target because they have the GPS and... That is why, yes, we understand that Putin told that Ukrainians are absent, that there's a common people, common nation, Russians and so on, so the Ukrainians are not exist at all. And that is why our heritage, our Ukrainian heritage, yes, it is in target and under the bombing in the first case, yes.
I would like to add several words to show you even worse case of this, because they would like not only vanish Ukrainian nation and Ukrainian heritage. Some churches, you know, like Russia is quite orthodox or orthodox country. Their value of religion is very high. So, you know, like people quite respectful about their church. And in Ukraine was long time a big conflict between the churches. We also have Orthodox Church, but we also had Ukrainian Orthodox Church, which is in direct connection to Istanbul, like World Orthodox Church. And that was a conflict that Ukrainians don't want to be under the Church of Moscow, which also had direct connection to the Istanbul church. And we did this separation because, you know, church is very important machine which influence human minds. And what I would like to tell that some of historical monuments, like churches, like Svetogorska Lavra, they were under Moscow, so under Moscow church. And you need to understand that they not only don't would like finish those part which belongs directly to Ukraine, the objects which had double history, so you know history not linear thing. It is Ukrainian period, Moscow period, conflicts between Kyiv and Moscow is like more than 400 years. And for example, this Svetogorska Lavra was quite in respect for Russians for a long time. And they not only destroyed Ukrainian value, Ukrainian history, but they don't want to have anything in common with us. So they destroyed those churches and cities, which like 10 years ago, they told a high respect and, you know, like they declare a lot of people from Russian came to Ukraine to visit these places, to pray in these places, you know. But now, they prefer to vanish all country just to tell that nothing was there. No churches, no respect. The same what happened with Odessa on 20th July of July. They target the church which was also under Russian, like under Moscow church. They target UNESCO center of the city.
I think that the question is not what a kind of church and what a patriarchy belongs direct church. It's a question about the attitude for our culture. It's a question to destroy all social values, to destroy infrastructure, to destroy economically important objects like Kakhovka hydroelectric plant, and to destroy important symbolic buildings, symbolic things and so on. It's like a chantage, I don't know in English, like chantage.
Blackmailing.
And to show the powerful of Russians, yes, power of Russians, a big country. We are country civilization, as Putin says. So to show this powerful machine which destroys everything. So I think that the message is in that.
Yeah, and maybe absolutely. Coming from the more to the archaeological heritage. In the same sense, you wrote that during the Russian attack and now in the now occupied territories, activities of criminal groups who illegally obtain archaeological artifacts with the intent of selling them to private collectors or whatever you want to call them have risen significantly. Do you have some cases where people were actually caught for stealing artifacts or of stolen artifacts that reemerged somehow?
I have no real examples because I am not a specialist in this moving of cultural values abroad and so on. And the first thing that we can tell that we have no enough information for the moment. We know that, maybe you heard about Samuel Andy Hardy, who traced the movement of different archaeological things abroad and so on. And he told us that, sorry, but these guys who are criminals, war criminals, warfare sellers, and so on. So these names are quite known by different organizations such as Interpol and so on. So the market of illegal archaeological things, it's a very criminal market compared to drug market, compared to people market. And he told me that he knows the names of these people, but sorry, he cannot speak because he gather information for another organization. But anyway, we can say that such groups are working on occupied territory. But a lot of values were stolen not by illegal groups, but by the politics of Russian state. Yep. Because such big museums as Kherson, Melitopol, Mariupol, these big museums was robbed by the Russian state. It was the program. It was special soldiers who took away all the exhibits, and these exhibits were transferred to Crimea, to occupied Donetsk and to Russia. Mm-hmm. And now even they speak about some exhibitions of Crimean artifacts in St. Petersburg, exhibition of some artifacts from Skytian Guild in St. Petersburg or in Moscow. So it's politics. It's not illegal groups. It's a political
official groups.
Yes, official groups. And of course, it's a big damage for our archaeology, loss of our archaeology, because all collections, you see, this is not just a so-called black archaeology when some groups with metal detectors going on burial mounds and so on, but this is total collections which are transported to another country. And they transported it, and they use these actions as a propaganda, because they told that they are they have rescue actions for these collections, for these exhibits. But in fact, this is not a rescue.
Maybe you mentioned it before already. You created a working group to address the issue of archaeological sites being discovered during this ongoing conflict. Can you maybe describe some of the work that this Archaeological Landscapes Monitoring Group is currently carrying out?
Yes, the main focus of this group is to firstly understand the scale of destructions, the scale of damage to the landscape. Archaeology, firstly, is a landscape. We have several initiatives. Some of these initiatives, they try to record damage from the satellite, from the Google Earth. But our group, Archaeological Landscape Monitoring Group, focused on the field work, because firstly, we can say that archaeological sites destroyed by the direct bombing, direct fire, direct hostilities. Even around Kyiv, we have big territories which was damaged by direct fire. The second case, it's even not only on the territory which was on the front line or under occupation, it's all territory of Ukraine was covered by different dugouts, trenches, and so on. Even in the western part of Ukraine, we have checkpoints, we have dugouts, and so on, because in first months of war, we didn't know in what directions our enemy will go. And that is why all country was covered by the network of these fences. And of course, the mostly significant places in topography was damaged. And these significant places in topography, it's usually this is burial mounds, this is hill forts, walls, and so on. So this is archaeologically places. And we know that even now we compare the maps of medieval hill forts and the map of frontline in Second World War and frontline in modern days war. We see that this frontline sometimes goes by the same points, and that is why many archaeological sites was damaged. Hill forts, burial mounds, and so on, because they used as fire points, observation points in modern war. And first focus was to go in field and to check, because I was here. Now I'm in Kharkiv district, and I was here in territorial defense service. And I made these dugouts and made these trenches for military purpose. And now I am here to check for the presence of cultural layers in these trenches and these dugouts. And firstly, it was a checking of medieval hill forts around Kyiv and Chernihiv. In Kyiv and Chernihiv regions, some parts of them was occupied and was damaged due to the hostilities. And yes, we focused on field work. We going directly to the site. We know that there was a bombing of this site, or there was a dugouts or trenches, and so sometimes we do the 3D model of damaged hill forts. So we made this work. And for the moment, we have two branches. One branch is a Kyiv regional branch, and another is a Chernihiv regional branch. And now this year, we trying to scale our work. We now, for the moment, appear at Kherson branch of this archaeological landscapes monitoring group. And contrary to other groups, contrary to other projects, we are focusing on field work. So as for us, we need to not only to record the changes of landscape, which can be made from the satellite, yes, but we need to made a cultural and chronological attribution of that layers that was damaged. So this can be done only by direct presence on site.
So in the beginning of the war, you helped to build these trenches and fortifications, and now we are actually going back to the same positions to record archaeological discoveries.
Yes, in first months of war, I occurred here in Kharkiv region with my family because this region is to south from Kyiv, so it was quite calm region, contrary to Kyiv territory. But anyway, here is by Kharkiv hydroelectric station, Kharkiv hydroelectric plant, and this plant also was one of the important infrastructural object of central Ukraine. And we organized here with the local people, with the local peasants, farmers, and workers, and so organized territorial defense service, and we made different fortifications around this kind of hydroelectric station. Mm. Yes, it was hard. I need to train to use different armory.
Yeah.
So on. Yes, we have trainings. We have shootings and so on, so and organized different groups, different checkpoints, and I tried to combine online education with students and working on checkpoints at nights. Yes. around Kharkiv region. So yes, that was quite hard to combine education and military work, but anyway, all our country was like this. And many archaeologists, you asked me about personal and professional impact, but as for me, it's both. I cannot make difference. When you started a conference about protection of archaeological sites in Kyiv, and this conference interrupted by the rocket fire to Kyiv, and there was a first blackout in Kyiv, 23 of November. And no internet, no light, no electricity, no heating, and so on. totally blackout in university in the center of Kyiv. Yes, of course, and you tried to understand what happened with your family. You tried to phone to wife, to children, and so on. But first plan was to hold on the conference. And how can make the difference between personal and professional when your friends, colleagues goes to the front line, and now many archaeologists and many my colleagues and my friends now are in armed forces of Ukraine, directly on the front line, and some of them unfortunately died. So it cannot explain. We used to be in this situation more than 1 year. We are in war, and each day we and our children listen information, read about deaths, about losses of civilian people. It's every day. It's everyday life at the moment in Ukraine. Because every day we have shooting by different means of civic objects.
People can do nothing. military services doing their best job ever. They doing everything they able to do. And that's true, like each Ukrainian has someone from family who are in front lines in the most horrible places ever. Like there are no person in Ukraine who told you that they lost nobody. Everyone lost someone. And that's horrible because it is today 519th day of war.
And even now, I am in archaeological expedition here in Kharkiv region, and I know many guys around who was in territorial defense service, and many local people goes to frontline now. And yesterday or maybe 2 days ago, our expedition gave money for local peasant, a local farmer. His son now in Siversk, directly near Bakhmut, directly on the front line, and he asked a binocle. It's a usual for us because our scientific organization, Center for Paleoethnological Research, this scientific organization gives money for even for uniform and now for binocle. So just people from our expedition gives money for the army.
In 2015, we were excavating together a wetland site in the swamps of Smolensk in Western Russia. And in 2017, you organized a really interesting workshop in Kyiv with archaeologists from many different countries, including some researchers from Russia. Do you think something like this will be possible again in the future once this terrible war is over?
As for me, I will be not ready. Conversation with scientists who not live, do not escape from Russia. Because as for me, Russia represents a fascistic and absolutely Nazi regime. And each scientist, each historian, in common sense historian, because archaeologist is a historian too, each historian serve the propaganda machine of this Nazi state. So if they don't leave, if they don't escape from Russia, as for me, they just, in our countries, as in Ukraine and it is in Russia, there is not a private archaeology. All archaeology is a governmental, it's a state organizations, state institutions, such as a Hermitage, such as a Russian Academy of Science, and so on. So they are included in this Nazi, in this fascistic machine, this system. They are representatives of this machine. That is why I will not ready to speak with them anyway. Even I will not ready to explain them why. Another case when scientists escape and they go away from these organizations, state organizations, and escape from Russia, it's another case. Even the head of Hermit, in 1914, we have a joint expedition with Hermitage. You remember, Noah? Yes.
Yeah.
There was an expedition organized by Hermitage, but we know exactly that the head of the Hermitage, Piotrowski, is a quite propagandistic figure. He made the messages that he also made his cultural war for Russian world. So how can I speak with the representatives of Hermitage?
Yeah, in the same time, they continue excavation in Kherson and Crimea, for example, despite the war. They're just doing their job, and like their job is their propaganda, unfortunately. People who left and who stayed, you know, because that's not only people, scientists, should escape from Russia, but they should stay that they not support Russia, because this propagandistic way in which they kind of continuing manipulation, but they not agreed on the word, their own words and beliefs that say the Russian doing bad stuff and this war is unreasonable and that's not. No, when only people who able to tell that this is wrong, we not support, we don't want to be linked, you know, we don't want to use affiliation. Maybe with these people we can continue work. You know, there are a lot of people who are in Russian and they do nothing. They just pretend that they have no access to news. They would like to change nothing, unfortunately.
And another aspect is just the scientific aspect. If we know that Russia is a very totalitarian, autocratic state, yes, that in this state, there is no any research which can be contrary to the official version. How can we believe for the results of their scientific research? How can we believe, use their results when we understand that all scientific and media and so on included in the propaganda system? So for the moment, for me, it's a question, how can I use information about Neolithic pottery or calibration by the Leningrad or St. Petersburg laboratory for C14 datings? I don't know exactly. Mm-hmm. How can I believe their results? Because if these results included, built it in the whole system of propaganda machine.
That was very, very interesting. Thank you very much, Marta and Pavlo, for taking the time to speak with me. And I wish you best of luck, and I hope that we can meet again in the future soon, hopefully, in person.
Thank you, Noah. Yes.
Thank you, Noah. Thank you for organizing for us this meeting. It is very important to share our experience.
All right, that's it for this episode. Given the ongoing situation, I thought it was an important aspect to highlight, especially as this war enters its third year already. In that sense, I want to thank again Pavlo and Marta for sharing their experiences and insights. And just for reference, we recorded the interview in August of 2023. I'm sorry it took me so long to release new episodes of this podcast, but I was busy finishing my PhD thesis. But now, season 2 is ready, and as the new episodes will sometimes be over 1 hour long, I decided to rename the podcast to Archaeological Context. In addition, I am very happy that it is now part of the APN, the Archaeology Podcast Network. In that sense, I hope you will tune in about 2 weeks for another edition of Archaeological Context with Dr. Noah.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.